It is Locked On Jazz for the 7th of June, a Thursday live Facebook edition with your questions coming. Plus, last night just showed how absurd this whole thing is, trying to compete with the Golden State Warriors, what I think about their future, and what I think it means to teams like the Utah Jazz. Plus, some thoughts on draft strategy of picks for the Jazz. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a look behind the curtains, and a bunch of geeky numbers on how this whole thing is playing out. All right. I have to share two things with you. I think many of you know that I usually try to get up early and do yoga. I've changed that because Eric Waters, our trainer, has told me I have to lift more. As I get older, you got to lift, you got to be strong, blah, 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 blah. I hate lifting, and I'm doing that, and it just makes me feel like I'm going to throw up every morning when I wake up. I now, like, wake up, I go lift, and then I feel awful. And yoga, I used to do it, and I felt good. Maybe it's one is harder work than the other. The other one I had to share that I just thought was funny this morning is there's this big, like, news story that the United States Army has found out the maximum way to caffeinate. And so their whole article is and then they don't tell you, by the way, that they have some algorithm in which they have tried to figure out how the maximum time to drink your coffee, to get your caffeine in your system, to give you the most alertness. And so their whole premise is this way to be able to make it so that you can drink as much coffee as you want get the most caffeine while drinking the least amount of coffee. Here's the problem. Coffee's my favorite thing on the planet. Like, I love coffee. Coffee is absolutely the item out there that I enjoy flavor-wise more than anything else out. So I don't have any interest in not drinking. I would like the opposite. I would like to be able to drink more coffee and have less caffeine so I didn't have to worry about caffeine overload. So I don't think they were talking to me. All right, let's do this. Last night was absolutely absurd. Last night, to me, was the absurdity of who the Warriors are. They have clicked in. They are playing with focus. Cleveland is playing surprisingly well in this series. It was close late, and on a night in where Steph Curry goes 1 of 10 from 3, 3 of 16 from the field, Klay Thompson goes 4 of 11, 2 of 5 from 3. Notice that even with his 4 of 11, he still scores 10 points, even without going to the free throw line, in which their bench should not only not make a 3, they didn't take a 3, in which Draymond Green still can't shoot. Andre Iguodala is not willing to shoot. Like, everything that could go somewhat wrong about the Warriors last night happened, other than Kevin Durant was superhuman and had 43. But LeBron's pretty superhuman. He wasn't great last night. He didn't look quite right. You could tell something's wrong, and he knew he didn't have the lift on his jump shot, and he didn't have quite the power that he might have actually, these 48-minute games might be wearing him down a little bit. So he just had 33, 10, and 11. They got a good offensive performance from Hood. They got 20 from Love. They cooled off from three for a while, and they didn't finish at the rim. But holy smokes. Like, Cavaliers had a defensive game plan. They did a lot of things right. And they, at home, all the energy in the world, and they still lost. So it's going to be a sweep, I would suspect, unless the Warriors just party endlessly in Cleveland. The Warriors, whether it's true or not, the myth around the Warriors, by the way, is that if you go find their losses, you can usually find a nightlife reason. Right? Like Klay Thompson's birthday in Salt Lake City, and they get blasted the next day. Day games in New York and L.A. have been hard for them. So maybe, for all we know, they're just going to tie it on in Cleveland for a few days. The takeaway for someone like the Jazz on this is I just think trying to build a team to try to beat the Warriors is, from our standpoint, a really fruitless venture. We should just build the best team we possibly can, understanding what the game is today and how we can do that well. But the idea that you're trying to build a team to try to compete with this group who's going to win their third title in 4 years, I got to tell you, I think it's a really bad idea. I'll give Houston great credit because I think we're also seeing how, if you're a Houston Rocket fan, you have to be sitting back right now and just being like, oh, like that was the finals. I don't mean this in disrespect to Cleveland. I think Cleveland's shown surprisingly well in the finals. But that was the finals. Houston built their entire roster, built their entire defense, built their entire schemes to beat the Warriors, and came about as close as you possibly can, and has written the blueprint now for everybody else on how to deal with the Warriors. What's incredibly eye-opening to me about the difference in the Rockets and the Cavaliers, and I think it gets very important for how teams build going into this season, is that Houston built this switching defense in which off-ball screens that are the premise of the Warriors' offense, we talked about this for 2 weeks, I apologize if you feel like you've heard this too much, had to go away because the Rockets were switching everything. The Rockets put in this defense solely to stop the Warriors. Daryl Morey said it. We're obsessed with stopping the Warriors. Now, it worked really well. It completely knocked the Warriors off their game. They didn't look at all right at all. They didn't have their same rhythm. People talked coming into the series of if they were right. And the fact was, as I said, it was just, and we were right on this, that Houston was that good. And to Houston's credit, they're frankly a bad three-point shooting night and a Chris Paul injury away from possibly beating the Warriors. What we're watching right now is Cleveland on the fly trying to implement a defense that's the Rockets' defense. And they can't do it. They make colossal errors all the time. They did some interesting things where they doubled Steph, but that leaves guys wide open. So they instead of switching Steph, they doubled him, and they tried all sorts of things. The idea that Tyronn Lue's not coaching, I think, is a little absurd. They're definitely trying different things. But go back to what Igor Kokoschkov said when the season series started between Oklahoma City and Utah. If you try to change your defensive scheme in the playoffs, you're in a lot of trouble. You can change your offense, but not your defense. And so we're seeing Cleveland try to change their defense in a lot of ways to switching. Now they've gone back to doing some more trapping and rotating, which they're more natural and they were better at it. Still, the Warriors are torching them. Their offensive rating last night was a 117, but I think it was 125 and 130 the first two games. Those numbers are absurdly high. So the switching that the Rockets did became their entire identity, and then they did it well against the Warriors. I think it's going to be interesting to see how many teams sell out to that style, which is really necessary against the Warriors, and I'm not sure. Frankly, we proved that if you have a big guy in the middle like Rudy Gobert, and Clint Capella could probably do the same thing, you can play like we do, which is drop the big, force people into take away their smart shots, their corner threes, their rims, their above the break threes, force them into a lot of mid-range shots, be analytically smart defensively, and defend the shot, and you'll be one of the elite defensive teams in the league. That's what the Jazz have proven. It's what Philadelphia has proven. And now in the playoffs, that's all changing. Instead of rim protection, the floor is spread, and you're switching everywhere. And what's interesting to me is how many teams are going to do what the Rockets have done, which is the only way you play the Warriors well is if it's just your DNA to do that defensively. And that's not who, that's not who the Jazz are. And so I wouldn't suggest that we go build our entire team to go beat the Warriors and try to undo the Warriors. I would instead try to say that we continue to play our game the way that we have, be who we are, maybe have that switching as something that's available to us and necessary when we need to. But what I think I've seen out of Cleveland is if you're going to do it, you kind of have to sell out all year to do it. I have a sort of kind of hot takey comment next about Durant that I haven't researched enough. I don't mean it to be that hot takey, and then I'll take your questions as well. Today's show is brought to you by our good friend, Devin Cash. Devin Cash of Equity Real Estate has been with us from the very beginning. And from the, I mean, all the way back, I look at my notes and I think we started probably over long over a year ago together when he said, I really want to approach real estate from the heart of a teacher. I never want my clients to feel uncomfortable in any situation. I love working with first-time home buyers because I can guide them through the process start to finish. When you need to talk to me, you talk to me. You won't have to deal with secretaries, receptionists, coordinators. I never rush clients into decisions. And a cherry on top, we can talk Jazz basketball. I'll tell you what. I may have never met anyone who knows their brand better than Devin Cash. Because whether it's Charity and Ryan, whether it's Zach Campbell and his move from Hawaii, whether it was Tim and Whitney and they're fighting the unreal peak of the market to be able to get the best system they could get, whether it was Ryan and Natalie Goldberg, who've all used Devin Cash, relaying one after another, the stories are all the same. Devin was given 2 free season tickets as well when you use him, but he has now been showing some willingness to change that for if you live far away, big screen television so you can watch your Jazz or something of that sort. Give Devin a call, 801-759-1495. He'll do a market analysis for you. And also he wants to make sure you know it's probably easier to get into a house than you think it is. 801-759-1495. Today's show is also brought to you by The Advocates. The Advocates are Utah injury attorneys here to help you in cases of emergency. What Matt has built over at the Advocates over 25 years is a 106-step process to get you the best results. Make sure nothing bad happens, and while it's all going on, treat you well with great communication. You call 801-355-5550, and within 60 seconds, a lawyer calls you. That attorney is now on your case. They schedule your case. They get into the system. That attorney can focus on you and the things that are important while an airplane-esque checklist of things takes place because every accident is different, but the process is the same. And that process, they have turned into efficiency. That efficiency means productivity, communication, and expediting the process. Experts at each task inside the process will act, and the attorney will continue to communicate with you, and at the end, things will be taken care of. It's Utah Advocates. Go to utahadvocates.com or 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. All right. I'm watching how dominant Durant is, coupled with Oklahoma City's inability to advance with Russell Westbrook as their lead guy. And I wonder, should have Oklahoma City with Durant gone further? Hard, right? I mean, I think there's no question in 2016 when they lose to the Warriors in 7, that's one of the great, I mean, that Warrior team is great, and they go on to lose to the finals. That's the 72-win Warrior team. That, you know, hey, you're up 3-1, you probably should win it. That's Serge Ibaka and Dion Waiters and Steven Adams. Maybe they're not. I mean, it's hard. I don't want to hot take it too much, but I do watch Durant and think to myself, whether it's because of Westbrook, whether it's because of the supporting cast, whether you want to put on Scottie Brooks, which I probably wouldn't, it feels to me that Westbrook precluded Durant from having the success that they should have had. That's now in 14-15, Durant gets hurt. In 13-14, they lose in the conference finals to San Antonio. It was pretty darn good, and maybe they were still too young to go get that done. So maybe this isn't fair, and I think Westbrook gets banged up in that series. So maybe the injuries preclude it from happening. I don't know. Just watching Durant, it's hard for me to fathom. They lose to the Rocket. They lose to the Memphis Grizzlies 4-1 in the 13-14 playoffs. I think there's an injury there. And they obviously, the 11-12 Harden team, they make it to the finals. Hot take, probably without a lot of backing. just a gut feeling I had watching Durant is that they didn't get enough out of him. Draft take for you. Promised you that. I'll get the numbers back on this, but here's the way the draft works, just in general. I'll get these numbers specific. One through five is where the money is made in the draft, okay, traditionally. Two of those five guys usually become all NBA players. One through 10, three of those players usually become really good. Five or six of them become starters, two of them rotation players, and two of them bust. 11 through 30, in the big picture, only half of those players become NBA rotation players. Only half. Interestingly, most of the mistakes in drafts happen 11 to 20, where teams are trying to reach for top 10 talent 11 through 20. Now, Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Donovan Mitchell only further accentuate this idea that in that span of the draft, can you get those guys? I mean, it really makes it Donovan, but you also are, there might be some guys who can't play, right? We don't know who they are, but there's a chance DJ Wilson can't play, and there's a chance that Luke Kennard's okay. Maybe Justin Jackson turns out to, I don't know who they're going to be from last year. And in the 20, you know, you just walked through this. In the 2016 draft, the 10 through 20 is Thonmaker. I don't know that he can play really yet. Sabonis, Price, Papanagos already out. Denzel Valentine, we'll see if what he does on a good team. Juan Herman Gomez, he's played 87 games. Ubaselli, we'll see. Wade Baldwin's already been released. Henry Ellison has played 400 minutes. Malik Beasley barely played. Like, that draft, 1 through 20, was a mess. Which is where it often is. Miles Turner, Trey Lyles, Devin Booker, Cameron Payne's already been off his team. Kelly Oubre, Terry Rozier's all right. Rashad Vaughn's kind of in and out. Sam Decker's been often injured. DeLon Wright, I actually think at 20 is going to be fine. I like him a lot. I'd take him tomorrow. Here's the point on this. When you get to 20 to 21, now all of a sudden, if you stop reaching, some of the things that you regularly would say no to, you can say yes. So, four-year college players, or particularly college players, three-year college players, older college players who had their success late in their career because they were then going against 18, 19-year-old guys, and you go project them in the top 10, you're making a big mistake. But you suddenly put Shabazz Napier, who played 4 years at UConn, at 22 years old and definitely was better. I mean, that's a great example. At 24, fine. You go get Malcolm Brogdon at 24, fine. You get Jason Hart last year out of Villanova at 24, fine. Joe Harris is another one of these guys, played 4 years in Virginia. He went 33. Get him at 20 in the 20s, fine. The players who you would stay away from because they don't have an upside, they're not going to develop in the realm of 1 to 10, 11 to 20, because you're trying to shoot the moon a little bit. At 21, go grab that guy. Is Brunson out of Villanova going to be Fred VanVleet? Is Brunson out of Villanova going to be a guaranteed to give you 17 tough minutes a night, every night? Probably fine. Is Grayson Allen, elite level athlete, going to be a sixth, seventh guy off the bench, being able to switch between the one and the two? Probably fine. Are you shooting the moon on Simmons, who's in the town today to work out? I'll tell you more when I'd know more after I see him. Who, because you think he could be the next Giannis? That would really scare the hell out of me at 21. Because that doesn't happen very often. Probably 5% of the time, maybe 2% of the time. So there's a really, on a draft, boredom, 21 through 30 is probably a good approach, if that makes sense. All right, let me take your first set of questions here, and then we'll keep going. Richard Child is always very active in our Locked On Jazz community. Thank you, Richard. Assuming Favors walks, what do you think of Davis Bertans? Better shooter than Jay, Tabo, and Jonas. Not as good defensively. Can he be a spark off the bench? Is he gettable as a restricted free agent? Can I go Bielitsa if I'm going to play the restricted free agent game instead? Is that over Bertans? I'm a little nervous on some of the Spurs system players. Bertans has shot at 38%. He's taken 425 threes in his career, so he's never played more than 12 minutes a night. Here's the problem I have, which I think is an interesting, just on Bertans, not a bad idea. Here's the interesting one I have on him. Unless you know that that they are in a lot of financial trouble because they have to give Kawhi the max or something of that sort. Because Bertans is a restricted free agent, the number you would likely have to give him to get him is over and have the Spurs not match it makes me nervous. Does that make sense? Like, I've got to go high enough that the Spurs aren't going to match him. I have other players I'd like to probably do there. So Bielitsa has never played more than 67 games in a season for Minnesota. It's Ricky Rubio's best friend. I don't know if that matters. He lived his last year in Rubio's house. He's a career 37% three-point shooter with 485 threes, so he hasn't hit the 750. 750, by the way, is the number where you feel comfortable what the next 750 is going to be. So similar, little less good shooter. I think he has a little bit of an off-the-bounce game and a little bit of a free-throw game, not a huge one that Bertans doesn't have. He is his rebounding percentages on Bielitsa are okay. They're not awful. Bielitsa went to the line a bunch his first year, stopped going to the line his last 2 years. He takes 50% of his shots as threes. He's truly a stretch with a little bit of enough of a dribble game. He finished well at the rim at 66% last year, so he's a decent rim finisher. Stays away from the mid-range, and is old. He's 29, so I don't know if that matters, though. And he's 6'10". There are not a lot of stretch guys. Bielitsa takes 2.7 threes a game. You want to find stretch fours that take 4 or 5 threes a game and shoot it over 35%. It is a slim pickings. I am driving the new Murdoch from Murdoch Chevy, the Colorado. It's pretty fabulous. Diesel. And it's interesting. I went and did a Google search trying to kind of understand, like, Chevy Colorado versus Toyota. Chevy Colorado versus, you know, GMC. All the, the Chevy Colorado is pretty fabulous. One, the diesel gets more efficiency. Two, it has a really cool safety feature. I didn't know about it. I'm driving the other day. A motorcycle turns on his blinker to turn left. I'm expecting him to turn left. A motorcycle's driving in front of me, and then all of a sudden, without turning his blinker, goes to turn left, actually bails out, doesn't do it, so you can tell he was lost. All of a sudden, this big red light flashes in my front of my face on my screen. It was a really cool safety feature. I'm impressed by that. user, Android Auto, Apple phone, all of those things to make it safer when you're driving. Pretty darn impressive. Efficiency and cost were on Colorado, the Chevy Colorado size. It's really nice. I've not always been a pickup truck guy, but this one's over the summer, particularly with the clubs and the bags and all the it's pretty awesome. Check it out. I got over at Murdoch Chevy. Tyson's there with the guys. You get the Murdoch's No Regrets Guarantee, which is car washes for life, safety inspections for life, five-day price match guarantee. It is all over at Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross, right off the side of the freeway. I really like it. I got a cool Hunter Green color that I'm driving right now. Check it out, Murdoch Chevy. If you're in the market for a truck, I would make sure you put that 90 years of history of Chevy in Utah into your decision-making and look at that Colorado. It's pretty sweet. I'm pretty impressed. All right, let's continue with your questions. I have the Hot Rod documentary and have not seen it yet. Bad on my part. Bad on my part. I need to. If Favors gets his threes going, shooting three or four or five a game, is he not the stretch four we're looking for? Yeah, he is. But is that a realistic thing to think could happen? It's just like he shot 22% this year. First year he's done it. He'll practice it more this offseason. Do you really think that from 63 attempts... So you just took him from 63 attempts to 380 attempts, and you took his percentage from 22 to 35. You sure on that? You're resting your franchise and your job as a GM on that? It's a big question. Is eventually the trend of selective switching and not giving into the bad matchup going to favor higher level, smarter defenses like ours in the immediate future till teams catch up? From Andy. Teams always catch up. That's what we're seeing here, right? This is the next catch up. Quinn has been an innovator on how to make sure he always gets the bad matchup. So now, who's the innovator on how to avoid the bad matchup? It's a good question. And how do you do it? Frankly, Houston did it pretty well by having Capella, P.J. Tucker, Luke Bamute, Eric Gordon, Chris Paul, guys who could, you know, Harden's the exception, switch around. It may be a personnel thing more than an X's and O things. Michael Fabian, the amount of media attention Donovan Mitchell's already getting as a rookie is amazing. So surprised to see him interviewing players yesterday and all over ESPN segments today. Very cool. He's a delightful young man. He has embraced it. They have embraced him. He is showing, as Durant did at Oklahoma City, you can get a lot of pub in a small market. And now he has to learn how to stay away from the poison. I mean, there's just a lot of poison out there that he can derail him at some point in time. That's the phrase that Brent Berry used to me. It's like, see if you can avoid the poison. What do you think of Rodney last night? Seems like the biggest limitation of his career is his confidence and mental stability. Would you agree? I'm happy for him. I thought he had a good game. He made three really terrible defensive plays that just gave up points. I mean, left Steph wide open, missed on a switch, got on the top side of Steph in the corner. Some really weird stuff. So he was not perfect, but I thought his offense brought them something. He'll get another opportunity. Hopefully he'll continue to play well. That might be the biggest limitation of his career. He also just might not be as good as we wanted him to be. And I don't mean that negatively. I think we wanted him to be really good. Hey, Pace Mannion. We are in Italy now, but you are international, aren't you? And congratulations to Nico. I heard Pace's son got an offer from Duke. So congrats, if that's true. I heard that just from friends. I did not. That's not an official report. I hope I didn't just screw up. I just thought I realized that. I just realized I was just talking to friends. We're talking about Pace. We talk about you still, Pace. Hope you're good, man. I got Pace's autograph when I was a kid around the Western Airlines turnstile in Salt Lake City Airport. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. You have to give us the story of the shirt you're wearing. Oh, Pagliacci Pizza is a Seattle pizza chain that is, and the Pearl Jam artists made this t-shirt with Squatch, the mascot for the Sonics, and an old school for one of their promotions. Pagliacci Pizza is unbelievably great. It's kind of like a staple in Seattle. There's more, like, here you have Papa John's and Domino's and Pizza Hut and all, like, you don't actually have much of that in Seattle because Pagliacci's own the market, and that's Seattle's pizza, and it's in every little neighbor. Seattle's kind of made up of little neighborhoods, Wallingford, Mercer Island, and Queen Anne, and Shoreline, and all these, and every little neighborhood has their Pagliacci Pizza, and that's kind of where everyone gets their pizza. And so you don't have the whole, as I said, all these other things. They do great delivery service. So they're kind of the essence of Seattle. And then they made these shirts, which I love, which have the old Squatch headband and kind of in a same artist who did Pearl Jam. They're really, really cool. So that's the story. We'll end on that. Shout out to the Galvin family. All right. Thanks, who gave me the shirt. Have a great one. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll do the same thing tomorrow. I'll go through your extra questions again. I think that's been a really good Friday show. And I'll head to the draft workout today. Have a good one. See you.